good evening, everyone. This is Lou Cavalli. You're listening to The Divided Kingdom. Well, I must say my voice is a little better than last week, if we'll just hold out for the whole hour. And seemed to have shaken off most of what was, I think, a cold. Could have been some allergies tossed in besides. But feeling pretty good today. Here it is. Oh, what is today? The 12th, as we record this, the 12th day of May, 2026. Well, we got a lot of news today. A lot of good things sent to me by my friend up in Massachusetts who keeps me informed what's going on up there. And we have a lot of other news worldwide. Let me tell you first that this is the Divided Kingdom radio program. You can hear us Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can hear us on shortwave if you have access to a shortwave radio on a frequency of 4.840 megahertz. And repeat Saturdays at 8 a.m. Eastern Time on 7.490 megahertz. And you can hear us on some other venues, kstartalkradio.com, kingdomstarradio.com, and you can also hear us by going to the internet, wwcr.com. They put out the shortwave, and I also can be, but it's the programs can be heard on their website. That's Worldwide Christian Radio. That's how you can remember it easily, wwcr.com, if you prefer to listen on the internet. Well, what do we have today? A lot of talk about the Hunter virus and the ship that had the outbreak. I believe, if I remember it correctly, that three people have died that were on the ship, and others are being quarantined. I have a couple little articles here pertaining to that. And at the last time I checked, NBC News was saying eight people have tested positive for it. Think I had that right? Now, here's an article that appeared in a publication online called The Sun, and I'm not too familiar with it, but it seems like what they're saying is backed up by other reputable venues. So let me give you a little bit of this. The title says, Rat Virus Fears. And the subtitle, Air Passenger Ill with Suspected Hunter Virus After Sitting Near Cruise Tourist Who Died Amid Fears Bug May Have Mutated. And this was by Claudia Hill, published May 12th. That's the very day I'm recording this program, 2026. It says, an Italian man has been struck down with suspected Hunter Virus in the 12th potential case of the deadly illness. And that, by the way, does agree with what NBC News was saying, that there were 12 potential cases. The 25-year-old was placed in quarantine after traveling on a Dutch KLM flight alongside a woman who later died from a Hunter virus infection. The Calabria local is now being rushed to hospital for testing, ANSA news agency said. If positive, the case would mark the first generation 3 infection, third generation infection, with cruise passengers pass the disease onto the public. It comes as French Health Minister Stephanie Risse said today, there is still a lot we do not know about the virus, including whether it has mutated. Three more rat plague ship evacuees tested positive for the killer disease on Monday, just hours after health officials gave them the all clear to leave the ship. It comes as, and this is a series of points. Point one, officials expect more cases as town denies causing outbreak. Two new positive Hunter virus cases detected. Three, Brit cruise passengers land in UK head to quarantine. Fourth point, Army medics parachute into remote island to treat suspected case. Five, Hunter virus patient zero revealed as bird watcher. And point six, and the final point, rat virus cruise passenger visited a school on infected territory. The latest, a Spanish guest is said to be asymptomatic let me say that again, asymptomatic, as medics quickly took them to quarantine in Madrid. Three cruise passengers have already died, with two of them confirmed to have had the virus. Now, WHO, that's World Health Organization, Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I apologize to him if I have it a little messed up. He said he expects there to be more cases of the killer disease. Tedros said, quote, "We would expect more cases because the first case was on April 6th, and until the report was confirmed as infectious around April 24th, 25th, there was a lot of interaction of the passengers. And because of the interaction, while they were still on the ship, even as they were taking some preventive measures, we would expect more cases," unquote. Passengers were given a questionnaire and assessed for symptoms of the deadly disease before disembarking, but were not tested before leaving the vessel. A French woman was confirmed to have had the virus after falling ill on her repatriation flight to Paris. She was allegedly told her early symptoms were just anxiety, that's in quotes, just anxiety, by doctors while on board the vessel. She later tested positive for the virus, with her condition deteriorating as the plane landed in the French capital, according to French Health Minister Stephanie Rist. The woman is now fighting for her life in a specialized infectious diseases unit at a hospital in the French capital. A U.S. citizen on the cruise also tested positive as he flew back to the States on Sunday night. Meanwhile, chaos has erupted. This is serious. At a Dutch hospital, after blood and urine from a hantavirus patient were handled without observing strict protocols, 12 staff members at Radboudumic Hospital, again, I'm not too sure about the pronunciation, but it appears to be Radboudumic Hospital in the city of Nijmegen, will be quarantined for 6 weeks. Radboudumic Hospital admitted it had not followed, quote, "the very strictest procedure," unquote. Dutch Health Minister Sophie Hermans told Parliament, quote, "The likelihood that staff have been infected as a result is small, but because we know we are dealing with a serious virus, we are confident we can keep this virus under control," she added. Investigators have so far suggested that a bird-watching trip at a landfill site in Ushuaia, Argentina's famed getaway city to Antarctica, sparked a deadly outbreak. But a local health chief has fiercely rebuked these claims. He said, "In Tierra del Fuego, we have no record of hantavirus cases in our history." Those are the words of Juan Facundo Petrina, the province's Director General of Epidemiology and Environmental Health. And he spoke those words to the BBC. Petrina highlighted that the disease's endemic zone lies nearly 1,000 miles north of the suggested source site. So there's a lot of things, as we conclude that article, that are not known at the present time. Once again, that was from an online publication called The Sun, S-U-N, that was published, well, today as I record this, May 12th, Tuesday, May 12th, 2026. And there were other things. There was a good article online from NBC News. I didn't print that out, but it says pretty much the same thing I just read. And then we have a little background in an article in the New York Post that's entitled, "The Last Hantavirus Outbreak Devastated an Entire Village. Here's how Argentina finally stopped it." This is by Chris Nessie. That's spelled N-E-S-I. Also, today's date, May 12th, 2026. And it shows some good photographs if you want to go to the website. The MV Hondius cruise ship that became the epicenter of a hantavirus outbreak during its transatlantic voyage set sail April 1st from Argentina where painful memories of the deadly virus still linger from the last major outbreak nearly a decade ago. Around 100 people attended a birthday party in the picturesque Patagonian village of Epuyen, E-P-U-Y-E-N, in November 2018, which became a super spreader event that ultimately killed 11 people. It took severe quarantine measures to stop the spread. And Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Acting Director Dr. Jay Bottichiera said Sunday that U.S. health officials were looking to protocols developed during past hantavirus outbreaks to contain the one from MV Pontius. That's the name of the ship again. Oh, let me skip down a little bit. Well, this is important. An infected guest who was experiencing symptoms of the virus at the time of the party transmitted the virus to several others seated nearby, leading to a cascading series of infections that sickened 34 others. Now, here we're talking about the one in Argentina about 8 years ago. And that's according to a report in the New England Journal of Medicine. And skipping down, and these are the words of Malin, M-A-I-L-E-N, Valley, V-A-L-L-E, age 33. She lost her father and both of her sisters in the outbreak. And she said, quote, "The person with the virus was just sitting at the same table as my dad, and at that table were several people who got infected, and people died," unquote. Tragically, Valley and her two sisters came down with hantavirus at their father's funeral. One of them died within hours of showing symptoms. The other was buried without a wake, she told France 24. She also said nobody was prepared to see how, in a matter of days, a family table was left empty. She tearfully recalled to that outlet. And skipping down, since the region's outbreak of the virus, which locals have come to call simply the Hanta, locals have taken measures to mitigate future potential outbreaks, including regularly airing out sheds and even scrubbing them with bleach. Human-to-human transmission of the virus is generally rare. It's most commonly spread through the urine, saliva, or droppings of mice. All right, and those are the key things that are in this article. They're just repetitions of the previous article. Let's see now. I don't think this other article said this. Of the 17 Americans who are aboard, 15 are being screened for symptoms at a quarantine facility in Nebraska, while the two patients known to be infected were flown to Emory University Hospital in Atlanta. So that's the most up-to-date we have as of now. By the time you hear this Thursday evening, more will be known, I'm sure. Okay, on a little lighter note, but still something serious, here we have an article from the Washington Times. And that last one was selections from the New York Post, May 12th. This is the Washington Times, Monday, May 11th, by Stephen Dinan. I guess is that how you say his name, D-I-N-A-N? 215,000 federal workers were delinquent on their taxes. Now, that's interesting. And by all my years of life, which are getting to be quite a few, I've never once missed paying my taxes on time. Sometimes it was a little tough, but I managed to do it. So here we have, but now what do we have? 215,000 were delinquent on their taxes. So let's see about the details. It says what to know. Those U.S. government workers were delinquent on federal taxes in the year 2024. They owed a combined $2.1 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars to the Internal Revenue Service. And the IRS is blamed, or the IRS blamed the pandemic for rising delinquencies. Well, Maybe so. I don't know. This is a little commenting now. I went through the pandemic like other people. I paid my taxes. But maybe there were other factors I'm not considering. And those 215,000 were 6.9% of the total workforce. Let me skip down a little bit. We don't want all these statistical details. The amount owed was up 43% in just 3 years. And they owed a combined $6.3 billion to Uncle Sam. And the Inspector General of the U.S. government said, quote, "While all taxpayers have a responsibility to file appropriate tax returns and pay taxes as they become due, federal employees have a higher responsibility to satisfy in good faith their obligations as citizens," unquote. Now, here's some of the delinquent groups. The U.S. Postal Service was the worst, with a 10% delinquency rate and an outstanding balance of $570 million in unpaid taxes for its employees. The Veterans Affairs Department had a delinquency rate of 7.3%, and its employees owed nearly $380 million. And I'll jump down because we don't. Not that interesting to rattle off all these statistics. Let's see what else we have here. Under the law, the Treasury Department is able to hold its own employees accountable for tax delinquencies. The audit said that that was probably a factor in the department having a relatively low delinquency rate of just 2.4%. The law, however, prohibits the IRS from sharing tax information outside of Treasury. So other departments struggle to deliver accountability, the audit said. The Inspector General said the IRS does flag some of the most suspicious cases by looking at people for whom significant income was reported, but who failed to file returns for at least 3 years. But the tax agency lets the cases slip through its fingers. Well, there's a good deal of statistics, and if you want to read those, I'll let you check those out on your own. This is available in the Washington Times. The date was Monday, May 11th. And the title was 215,000 Federal Workers Were Delinquent on Their Taxes. All right. Once again, you're listening to The Divided Kingdom. I'm Lou Caramelli. If you'd like to write to me, we could sure use some contributions right now. We're running behind. And the sad fact is, unlike when my dear wife Elizabeth was living and we had a higher income coming in, I simply can't afford to run the program with my own money. So if you can contribute, we have some stalwart, faithful contributors each month that keep the program going. But it's kind of touch and go right now, and I'd appreciate any help you give. If you can give some form of help, even if it's small, you can write to me, Lou Caramelli, L-O-U, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, at Post Office Box 28. And the town is Bethlehem, just like in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. So that's Lou Caramelli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Well, it seems like crime is up. You hear about these horrendous cases, people being pushed onto the subway tracks in New York City, and others assaulted in various ways. Suddenly we're hearing more about crime. I guess it was always crime since the beginning of time, but it seems like it's getting worse. Well, Mississippi has a new warning Sounds kind of good to me. This appeared in the Gateway Pundit, May 10th, 2026, by Cassandra McDonald. The headline reads, "Bold New Billboard Warns Violent Criminals." And this is in quotes. This is what the sign says. "Welcome to Mississippi, where the firing squad is legal. Think twice." Unquote. A new billboard has gone up in Mississippi warning would-be criminals crossing the state line from Tennessee that firing squads are legal there. The billboard is on Interstate 55 southbound, where drivers enter Mississippi from Memphis. It was put up by DeSoto County District Attorney Matthew Barton. And it says, as I read before, "Welcome to Mississippi, where the firing squad is legal. Think twice." The billboard is part of Barton's aggressive public campaign to deter violent crime. It directly references Mississippi's 2017 law that authorizes execution by firing squad as a legal method of carrying out the death penalty when illegal injection drugs are unavailable. Mississippi is one of only a handful of states that still permits this method, alongside electrocution and, more recently, nitrogen hypoxia or hypoxia. District Attorney Barton is not mincing words in his reasoning for putting up the billboard. He says, telling the DeSoto Times, quote, "This campaign has one purpose, deterrence. We are going to be loud and clear that DeSoto County does not coddle violent criminals. If you bring violence across our state line, we are going to prosecute you aggressively and hold you accountable." He went on to say, "People on death row are the losers of life's lottery. If violent criminals are looking for a state that coddles crime, Mississippi is not it. They better think twice before they act here." And Barron explained that safety is achieved through enforcement. "State communities do not happen by accident. They happen because law enforcement officers, prosecutors, judges, and citizens refuse to surrender their communities to violent criminals." Unquote. And this is not Biden's first tough on crime billboard. Attorney General Barton, I believe that's his title, a district attorney, Matthew Barton, previously directed signs reading, "Turn back now," in the same area to warn criminals away from DeSoto County, which has seen spillover from Memphis's fervent crime. Well, that was from the Gateway Pundit. Pretty good. Pretty good way to put up a sign, I think. And that was by Cassandra McDonald, May 10th, 2026. Well, what other crimes do we have? There are nonviolent crimes, but some of them are pretty serious. This was also from the Gateway Pundit, dated May 11th by Mike LaChance. And the title says, oh, great, "Mayor of Arcadia, California busted for acting as an illegal agent for China." You may have heard something about this on the radio. I heard a little bit this morning on Fox News. And the article says, if you needed another reminder that the state of California needs help, this should do the trick. Eileen Wang, the mayor of the city of Arcadia, has just been charged with acting as a foreign agent for China. She was posting information on a supposed news website that was basically regime-approved propaganda from the Chinese Communist Party. How many more sleepers like Wang are out there? It's disturbing to consider that possibility, isn't it? Now, from ABC News, we have this. Eileen Wang, the mayor of Arcadia, California, has just been charged with acting as an illegal foreign agent for China, the Justice Department announced on Monday. Wang agreed to plead guilty, the Justice Department said. Starting in late 2020, Wang and Yong Mike Sun, Mike is his nickname, real name is Y-A-O-N-I-N-G, last name Sun, S-U-N, worked together, that is, Ms. Wang and he worked together to operate a website called U.S. News Center that, quote, purported to be a news source for the local Chinese-American community, unquote. The Justice Department said in a plea agreement that Wang and Sun, quote, received and executed directives from PRC, that is, People's Republic of China, government officials to post pro-PRC content on the website, and sometimes sought approval from PRC government officials to circulate other pro-PRC content. Remember, that's People's Republic of China. This is a, I'll interrupt for a minute, it's kind of ironic because President Trump was going to see the Chinese leader today, or at least he was flying there. Don't know if you're going to see him today. I guess it's nighttime as I record this late in the afternoon here in Maryland. It would be nighttime in China. So I suppose tomorrow would be the day of that meeting. Well, back to the article. In one instance, in November 2021, Wang wanted to circulate an article about the Chinese and Russian ambassador asking for Americans to respect the PRC's democratic rights. That's in quotes, democratic rights. And we have a little bit more from the Justice Department. Let's see, it repeats that she's been charged with the crime. She's 58 years old, again in Arcadia, California. And she's agreed to plead guilty to a felony count, which comes with a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison. She's expected to make her initial appearance this afternoon in U.S. District Court. And I presume that means May 11th. That would have been Monday afternoon. She was elected to the office of mayor in November 2022 to the Arcadia City Council, a five-person governing body from which the mayor is selected on a rotating basis. And the author concludes by saying, by the way, there are others like this out there. Yes, I imagine there are plenty of others. For China, for Iran, for a good many things. We did have one other little thing. I'll just skim through it about the Hanna virus from Fox News, May 11th, entitled U.S. Health Officials to Speak After 17 Americans Land in Nebraska and One Test Positive for Hanna virus. Well, this is a bit obsolete because this is yesterday, May 11th, as I record this. So I don't think there's too much there. The ship that had the people who came down with the virus is anchored off of the Canary Islands in Tenerife, I think is the name of the big city there. Then they were flown to Nebraska, University of Nebraska Medical Center, which is a federally funded quarantine facility. I think the rest of this we had already read about, but that's a good little summary article from the Fox News on May 11th. Okay, the war in Iran continues. Here's an article that appeared about a week ago, Sunday. No, I take that back, just a couple of days ago, Sunday, May 10th. This appeared in the Washington Times. One Iranian nuclear weapon could black out America. Yeah. EMP warning stretched back decades, yet federal inertia still leaves transformers, utilities, and families dangerously exposed. Now, I'll make a few comments of my own before I read this. It was something that was commonly talked about on talk radio quite a few years back. I know Elizabeth, my late wife, listened to Alex Jones pretty faithfully in those days, let's say in the general neighborhood of 2005 to 2010 and beyond. And, in fact, quite a bit beyond that. this whole idea of an EMP attack was a common theme that a lot of guests talked about as a grave threat to the U.S. And it seems to me that some high-ranking politicians had actually taken steps on their own for their own household to protect against it. So let me read what this is. This is called, under the general heading of opinion, in other words, a kind of an editorial. And this is by Rudy Boskowitz and Henry F. Cooper. Again, Sunday, May 10th, Washington Times. Even a single nuclear weapon detonated at high altitude over the United States poses an existential threat to most, if not all, Americans. Why? Because we have failed to protect our critical, life-supporting electric infrastructure against such an event. An electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, is an electric shock that could shut down the majority of our electric power grid, likely preventing power restoration for a very long time, a matter of months or years. The effect could bring our nation to its knees. People couldn't live long without electricity. Just as important, many cars and trucks wouldn't work either. We have known all about this for a long time. We have protected our most important military systems against it, since its potentially lethal effects were discovered in the early 1960s. A congressionally appointed EMP commission thoroughly considered the problem and formally documented its conclusions in testimony and several reports. Congress was thoroughly warned as well, especially at a May 4th, 2017 hearing before the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Yet little, if anything, has been done since to protect our life-supporting electric grid. It is hard to believe, but it is a fact. Again, a single nuclear weapon exploded high above Earth would quickly produce an EMP on a wide area of the planet's surface, causing an enormous voltage and current surge in the nation's electric power grid. This would likely destroy our key, difficult-to-replace elements, such as the huge transformers essential to providing electricity to essentially our entire population. We can protect these transformers by installing grounding devices that guard against the huge voltage thrust. The cost of grounding devices for all the nation's estimated 5,000 to 6,000 transformers is believed to be a most affordable $4 billion to $5 billion. Still, there is more to do. The electric system that serves our country is not that simple. Beyond the transformers, it is an entire system of energy production and distribution, most of which is owned and operated by co-ops and other more localized companies in cities and counties. Protecting that widespread system throughout the U.S. is estimated to cost local subscribers less than $10 on their monthly electric bills. We have understood this threat for more than 60 years, since our 1962 high-altitude nuclear test called Starfish Prime in the South Pacific. That test turned out the lights and damaged other electrical systems in Hawaii, some 900 miles away, and damaged nearly all our satellites of the era. In 2001, the Congressional EMP Caucus began widely reporting these facts. Yet little was done before President Trump issued an executive order in 2019 directing the federal government to address the vulnerability. Regrettably, the Biden administration did not continue that initiative. Thanks to the U.S. Senate, led by Senators Jim Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, and Ron Johnson, Wisconsin Republican, that executive order was written into the 2020 National Defense Authorization Act that made it the law of the land, which still applies today. We urge Mr. Trump to finish the job. The Iranians know all about EMP. They have written about it, and they know full well what a single nuclear weapon can do. That is why even one such weapon in the hands of the mullahs is one too many. And it's mentioned that author Rudy Boskowitz was a U.S. Senator from Minnesota from 1978 to 1991. He is a former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Human Rights Commission and served as President George H.W. Bush's emissary to Ethiopia. Henry F. Cooper was U.S. Ambassador and defense and space negotiator with the Soviet Union under President Reagan and Strategic Defense Initiative Director under President George H.W. Bush. So that's a sobering article from the Washington Times on May 10th, Sunday, May 10th. And the title, once again, is One Iranian Nuclear Weapon Could Black Out America. And although it doesn't say it in the article, I believe that it has been reported many a time that computers would be knocked out because the delicate parts would be subjected to such a sudden voltage surge that it would short out those delicate printed circuits. And automobiles of today are vulnerable because of that same reason. They depend so much on computerization, even just to run the engine, that they would be rendered inoperable by one of these electromagnetic pulses. So it's a sobering article, and we hope the government will take action. This is one of the reasons, no doubt, that President Trump has said Iran must not get a nuclear bomb. Not just because they might attack neighbors in the Middle East, not because they might attack Israel and decimate Israel, but because they could present a real big threat to the United States. Now, I believe it was last week I talked a little bit about that subject of UFOs, or as they now tend to be called, UAPs. Think tank, just different names. UFO, of course, is unidentified flying object. UAPs is unidentified anomalous phenomena. And President Trump has ordered the release of files that the government holds pertaining to many cases of these UFO UAPs. Here's an article on May 8th from Reuters news agency. Trump releases government UFO files, more expected. This is by Andrew Hay, May 8th, 2026. And it talks a little bit about some of the interesting ones here. Item one of five, that this is probably a caption of a picture. I didn't copy the pictures because, frankly, it costs too much money. Uses up the tone so quickly. But you can see the pictures if you go to any of these websites on the line. They have some very interesting color pictures, as well as some black and white ones. It says, item one of five, a football-shaped body reported by the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command in 2024 is seen as part of a series of documents of unidentified aerial phenomena released by the U.S. Defense Department on May 8, 2026. And it says Department of Defense handout provided via Reuters news agency. And just to give a little summary of what it says, files include Apollo mission photos and transcripts of unidentified phenomena, move praised by UFO disclosure advocates, more releases expected in 30 days, critics, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, call the release a distraction from Trump woes. And here's the main body of the article on May 8th, Reuters. At the order of U.S. President Donald Trump, the Defense Department on Friday released dozens of previously classified files on alleged UFO sightings to provide what it called unprecedented transparency to the American people. The analyst said many of the documents had already been made public. The disclosure opens new tab of documents, photos, and videos of unidentified anomalous phenomena. It will be followed by future releases as more materials are declassified, the Department of Defense said in and I'm going to skip down a little bit here. The files include a 1947 report of flying discs, as well as green photos of unidentified phenomena taken from the moon's surface by the 1969 Apollo 12 lunar mission, and a transcript of the Apollo 17 crew describing unidentified objects seen from the moon in 1972. Apollo 17 mission pilot Ronald Evans reported a few very bright particles or fragments or something that go drifting by as we maneuver, unquote. And the mission control replied, "Roger, understand." And I'm going to skip down a little bit here. Harvard University astrophysicist B.B. Loeb said in an email to Reuters, "The files show that UAP are not simply a matter of speculation or public curiosity. The government has collected records," unquote. And let's see now. The images from Apollo 12 and 17 were fascinating, but could be the result of asteroid impacts on the lunar surface, Loeb said. And let's see, some critics cast the UFO disclosures as a distraction from Trump's political woes, including the unpopular U.S. military campaign against Iran, and public pressure to release further files tied to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Let's see now. Independent journalist Leslie Keene says the release showed that there was still a lot of government information on UAP that should be disclosed. Keene co-authored a 2017 New York Times story on a secret Pentagon UAP program, which prompted Congress to push for declassification of UFO documents. "I think we've already proven the existence of UAP, but that doesn't mean we've proven they're alien or extraterrestrial, or that we know what they are," said Keene. So that's an interesting report. As I said, I think last week, this has been a subject that intrigued me since I was a boy. And that's a long time ago. We're talking over 60 years ago. Now, this article here was from Reuters on May 8th, but there are all kinds of articles down through the decades. At one point, the Air Force actually, for a day or two, said that the Roswell craft was an alien spaceship. You can look that up. But they quickly denied that and said, "Oh, no, no, no. It was just a weather balloon." I must admit, I have never seen anything that would resemble an alien spacecraft. I know when I was a teenager, there was a very famous sighting, and at least it was made into a book by John G. Ford, called Incident at Exeter, where there were sightings, quite a few sightings, in Exeter, New Hampshire. Now, it just so happened that Exeter was very close to what was then Pease Air Force Base in the general area of Portsmouth, New Hampshire. What were they? Well, that's a good question. Here we are all these years later. And that was, I think, around 1965. I would have to look at the exact year. But all you have to do is type into the internet, UFOs at Exeter, E-X-E-T-E-R, New Hampshire. And you will probably get many, 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 many websites. Type in the three letters UFO, and you'll find umpteen different websites. Some say there's nothing to it. I remember there were arguments. I think it was Bob Kennedy had a program on WBZ Radio. He used to listen to many a night at 6 p.m. way back in the 1960s when I was still living in Massachusetts. And he would have from time to time, he had all kinds of guests, but from time to time he would have some guests talking about UFOs, as they were then called, or more simply, flying saucers. I can remember to this day, he had a professor at Harvard, Donald Menzel, who took the skeptical point of view. He basically said they were just weather patterns, misidentifications of familiar objects. and other common everyday things just misinterpreted. And he got into some very heated arguments. He was a bit on the hot-tempered side. He would get into some heated arguments with those who professed to believe that these were alien spaceships, or at the very least something totally unknown, and not just misinterpreted everyday things. While I found those fascinating, still find the subject kind of interesting, I actually purchased a book. I have it right in front of me here, called The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects, the original 1956 edition, by Edward J. Ruppelt, R-U-P-P-E-L-T. And Mr. Ruppelt was he was a captain, and he was, I think, the first person to use the term unidentified flying objects. And he had a Project Blue Book from 1951 to 1953. So this is not just a used copy, this is a new copy of the book, but using the original text. And it does have a new introduction by Colin Bennett, author of Flying Saucers Over the White House. And very nice little book. And it's very interesting to read what was said way back then and compare it to what we don't know now. Here we are, 1956 to 2026. I believe if my arithmetic is right, that's 70 years. And still, this topic is being debated. And fiercely debated among various people. Some say it's hogwash. Nothing to it. Others say, well, there might be something to it, but they're probably nothing more than something we don't really know exactly about. Some kind of strange weather phenomenon, some kind of strange natural phenomenon. But you see, 70 years later, it's still being debated. Can't think of too many other things in the world of science and, just ordinary public knowledge, if you can call it that. Here's another little note from WorldNet Daily. This appeared on May 8th by Bob Unger, one of the regular WorldNet Daily authors. Are they real? Trump administration unleashes first batch of UFO files. Government image shows a small dot indicating heat directly below a helicopter over the western U.S. in 2025. Files and videos of UFOs apparently never before seen by the American public were released on Friday by the administration of President Donald Trump. Called Unidentified Anomalous Phenomenon, the release was part of Trump's campaign to increase transparency, et cetera, et cetera. I'll skip down because our time is running out. You can see these files online, by the way. If you type in something like government UFO files, that should be enough to direct you to the government's website that's devoted to this subject. And let's see now. As they said previously in the other report, you have some eyewitnesses in Apollo 12 and Apollo 17. You have and it mentions that it was Barack Obama who claimed that aliens are real, prompting a follow-up question from Fox to Trump, who revealed Obama's misbehavior. And Trump said he gave classified information. He's not supposed to be doing that. I don't know if they're real or not. I can tell you, he gave classified information. He's not supposed to do that. He made a big mistake. But Trump then said he would declassify much information on the topic. Well, and Tulsi Gabbard said the files long had fueled speculation. It's time the American people see it for themselves. They don't really give you much detail as to what the files contain. Probably they had not yet been time to really look at them in depth. Yeah, if you want to go, it says the collection, now this is from the Gateway Pundit, Department of War releases unidentified anomalous phenomena, UAP files in historic transparency effort. This is by Jen Baker, May 8th. I'll just read a couple of things here. The collection will be housed. That is, the collection of all these files will be housed on the website war.gov/UFO. That's, in other words, the Department of War. war.gov/UFO. Again, they have some quotes here, mostly just patting themselves in the back, releasing them by government officials. And again, if you want to see some of those pictures, and some of them are videos as well as still photographs, go to that website or any one of many, many other websites you can go to. And there are still books being published, modern books as well as older books. I've got one right here, so I can dig it out from all my pile of junk. Where is that book? This is one I got a couple of months ago. The Big Book of UFO Facts, Figures, and Truth by Stephen Spignesi and William Burns. It's a nice little book, and it has, at the beginning, a collection of 218 sightings from 1947 to 1967 by military personnel. And these came from the Project Blue Book files that have in the past been released. And there are other things there. Jimmy Carter filed a report on what he thought was a UFO. And there's a lot of other things in here. One of the parts of the book is Roswell, the UFO mystery that won't go away. And there are all kinds of other good things in that book. But I'm going to move on real quick. My intrepid friend in Massachusetts has sent me all kinds of great clippings. I'll give you a few of the headlines. Don't have time to read all the details. There's a couple about the Southern Poverty Law Center. That was an organization that purported to defend people's liberty against extremist groups in particular. My wife Elizabeth, who sadly passed away just about 14 months ago, used to think very highly of the Southern Poverty Law Center. But then she found some things that were questionable about it. They seemed to be classifying as dangerous groups or hate groups perfectly good organizations. There's a little article here. Don't have time to read much of it. From the New York Post, Thursday, April 23rd, Hate Weaponized Here in New York by Maron. In 2023, the Southern Poverty Law Center slapped a target on ordinary parents' backs. That's when it added Moms for Liberty, Defending Education, and 10 other parents' rights groups to its list of anti-government extremists, feeding them directly into the SPLC's widely circulated hate map, alongside such neo-Nazi organizations and the Ku Klux Klan. Those designations deserve another look in light of Tuesday's bombshell Department of Justice announcement. An Alabama grand jury has indicted the SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, for wire fraud, false statements, and conspiracy to commit money laundering based on shocking allegations that the left-wing nonprofit directed over $3 million in donor funds to the KKK, the American Nazi Party, Aryan Nation, and other violent extremists. All right, so that's what the SPLC has been charged with. We'll see in the coming months if it's true. And if it is, I wouldn't give a nickel to them. This is from the New York Post, Thursday, April 23rd. Again, hate weaponized here in New York. What else we got? Oh, Congress. Sex, that's always an interesting topic. Here's something from The Post, New York Post, Tuesday, April 21st. Congress sex investigations revealed. It's a house of ill repute. The House Ethics Committee published a list Monday of all its publicly disclosed sexual misconduct investigations into members stretching back to 1976. The 28 investigations span from former reps Tony Gonzalez of Texas and Eric Swalwell of California, both of whom resigned from the House last week, to the late Representative Wayne Hayes of Ohio. And there were 14 Democrats and 12 Republicans, pretty evenly balanced. The great Representative Elsie Hastings, Democrat of Florida, was twice investigated for pursuing a sexual relationship with a staffer in 2014 and again in 2020. He died in 2021 and was replaced by Representative Sheila Sheaphyllis McCombe, who was recently faulted for 25 ethics violations and in a probe of her purportedly pilfering $5 million in federal COVID-19 relief funds. Well, that's pretty interesting. Congress sex investigations revealed. That's New York Post, Tuesday, April 21st. Oh, we've got so much here. There's an article about that Southern Poverty Law Center by Adam B. Coleman of the New York Post. Many, many good things. I'll do some of these next week, too. Do some of these very interesting headlines. Again, we could use your help to keep your program on the air. It was a time when I could afford to pretty much pay for it myself, but I can't do that anymore. If you can help us out, write to me, Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And visit our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you for any potential help you're able to give. I want to thank especially those fine people who have helped us out in the past and continue to help us out. That's why the program is still on the air, from the help you give us. Thank you again, and have a great week. Tune in again next week. Good night.